Hey, podcast community, Dr. Mark here. I'm so excited to offer you a 7-day free trial of my revolutionary new platform called Dr. Hyman Plus. For 7 days, you get special access to all the private content included in Dr. Hyman Plus entirely free. It's so easy to sign up. Just go to Apple Podcast on your phone and click Try Free button on the Doctor's Pharmacy Podcast. You'll get exclusive access to ad-free Doctor's Pharmacy podcast episodes and functional medicine deep dives where a practitioner dives into topics like heart health, muscle health, insulin resistance, and more to help you understand the root cause of specific ailments and walks you through the steps to improve your health today. You'll also get access to all my Ask Mark Anything Q&As where I answer the community's biggest health and wellness questions. Because I'm so sure you're going to love this platform, I am offering you free access to all of this content for 7 days and a teaser of my brand new Ask Mark Anything episode. Head on over to the Doctor's Pharmacy Podcast on Apple Podcast and sign up for your free trial. Okay, here we go.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Ask Mark Anything. My name is Herschel Perth. I'm the Dr. Hyman Plus Community Manager, and I'm joined by Darcy Gross, who is one of the producers of the Longevity Roadmap docuseries. Hi, Darcy.
Hi, good morning. Good
morning. And of course, we are here with our expert, Dr. Mark Hyman. Hi, Dr. Hyman.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for joining us today and answering the Ask Mark Anything questions. So let's go ahead and get started. So our first question comes from our community, and they want to know, what is the best way to prevent breast cancer or prevent it from reoccurring? And also, do you recommend thermography or mammograms for early detection?
All right, thanks. Well, that's a great question. Well, breast cancer is a big problem, and it's affects so many women. It's so common, but it didn't used to be. And I think part of the reason is, one, our diet, and two, environmental toxins. So the two things I think you can do, and there's many, many things we'll go through, but the two things I think that are most important to do are, one, to address your diet. Insulin resistance, sugar, starch is driving high levels of insulin, and that drives inflammation, and the whole process of cancer is fueled by sugar and starch. So if you really want to address the risk for breast cancer, the key is to really deal with the visceral belly fat. And that it's following all the guidelines I've put out for all these years around, for example, low glycemic diets, low starch sugar diets, higher good quality fats. And I think I encourage people to actually, if they're really struggling with weight or metabolism or have high blood sugar insulin, to do a 10-day detox diet, which is basically my 10-day detox, but you can do it for longer. The 10 days was sort of a trick. You want to get people in and try it. They'll feel great. They'll stay on it until you get to your ideal weight and metabolism. So that's really important. The second thing is to really focus on reducing exposure to environmental toxins. A lot of toxins are called xenobiotics or xenoestrogens. They're essentially foreign molecules that mimic estrogen, and they're highly synergistic and toxic. So pesticides, plastics, phthalates, all the stuff that we're exposed to in cosmetics, in our water, in our air, in our food, in our household cleaning products. These are all things that we're constantly exposed to, and there's just lots of them. So the best way to reduce them is to reduce your exposures by changing what you're using in terms of what you're eating. So organic food, ideally, filtered water, filtered air in your house, having the reduction in your household cleaning products with toxins and skincare products. And the great resource for that is the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org. And they have great guides on skin deep, what are the best skincare products that have no toxins, household cleaning products, food, and so forth. So it's really important to reduce your overall exposures. Sometimes people need to address like toxic burden. So maybe different detoxification programs can help. The other thing I really focus on is the gut. You know, the gut plays a huge role in the cancer process. And it's quite interesting. There's various bacteria in the gut that can actually cause your body to recirculate estrogen. So when you detoxify estrogen and you get it through your liver, it essentially can be excreted and pooped out essentially, or There's these enzymes called beta-glucuronidase, which comes from kind of nasty bacteria in your gut that can unpack the estrogens from their package, and then you reabsorb them. And this causes this recirculation of estrogens. And we see, you know, women, for example, who take antibiotics have higher risks of breast cancer because it changes the gut bacteria. So keeping your gut healthy, we have something called gut food, which is it's like a multivitamin for your gut, probiotics, prebiotics, all that is really helpful, polyphenols to keep your gut healthy. So keeping your gut healthy is really important. The other thing that's really important is look at your methylation status. This is B vitamins, B6 folate, B12. And what we really now understand is that there are various estrogen metabolites. Some of them are pro-cancer, some of them are anti-cancer. For example, your body, when it produces estrogen, it gets detoxified. And there's no such thing as estrogen, by the way. There are estrogens, estradiol, estrone, estriol. And estradiol is the main one that you produce for most of your reproductive life. And that gets broken down by the liver into two estrogens or 16, we call them 2-hydroxy or 16-hydroxy or 4-methoxy, all these different breakdown products. The 2-16 ratio is something you can actually measure in the urine. You can look at the breakdown products in your urine. You see this high level levels of 2, that's great. That's protective anti-cancer. High level of 16, not so much. So you look at the ratio of that. And the good news is the 2 you can increase by increasing cruciferous vegetables and broccoli, organic and non-GMO soy foods like tempeh, tofu. You can increase it by increasing the amount of exercise you do. So there's a lot of things you can do to actually boost 2-hydroxyestrone. But if you actually want to reduce 16, you have to deal with this insulin resistance stuff and toxins. So environmental toxins in the whole insulin problem that actually causes the 16 to go up, which is the more dangerous carcinogenic form. So you can actually measure these in your urine and you can change your diet and your lifestyle. For example, there's a broccoli extract called diindolmethane or Oncoplex is one brand of sulforaphanes, glucosinolates that actually boost this 2, which is important for reducing your risk of cancer. And these products have been really well studied in terms of cervical cancer, breast cancer. And one of them is made by Johns Hopkins. The brand is a Zymogen and Oncomplex is the product, but it's basically glucosinolates and sulforaphanes that actually help with this detoxification process. Obviously exercise also helps. Obviously stress reduction helps. And I think there's some really interesting data around trauma and expression of feelings and anger. There was been some pretty interesting studies looking at, you know, women who have breast cancer. They tend to kind of repress their feelings, repress anger, not really have sort of fully dealt with trauma, be more people pleasers. So not being fully expressed also seems to be a risk. And there's, you know, obviously many ways to work through that through therapy or coaching or even novel therapies that are now being used to deal with trauma, such as psilocybin, MDMA, which I think soon will be legalized. So that's sort of a big overarching view. Taking the B vitamins, B6, folate, B12, making sure you get enough vitamin D, all these are really important in terms of reduction of cancer risk. So that's sort of high level. In terms of mammogram or thermography, I think they both have their role. But I think, you know, it's important to get checked regularly. That's the main take home.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for that detailed information. And that was really interesting information about the supplement from John Hopkins. We'll make sure mm-hmm. we for that as well. So thank mm-hmm. you. Darcy, over to you for the next one.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for all that. So kind of switching gears a little, the next question has to do with food sensitivities. So it would be helpful to kind of give an introduction into what a food sensitivity is versus like an allergy. But the question is also what food sensitivity test would you recommend? And of the ones that exist, like how do you decide which one is the best for you?
Oh, this is a wormhole, a rabbit hole. First of all, let's just sort of distinguish two things. One is the fact that there are food sensitivities and they're real and they exist, and then the testing for them. They're two separate questions. So I'm going to sort of address them separately. The first thing is that, you know, we're all familiar with food allergy. That's, you know, a peanut allergy, shellfish allergy. That is when you get anaphylaxis, hives, you know, tongue swells up and you can't breathe. That's life-threatening and dangerous. Those people know they have it. It happens immediately. It's called an IgE reaction, which is one type of antibody called IgE that your body makes. And you have different antibodies for different things. So you have antibodies to deal with acute infection. You have antibodies to deal with chronic immunity, long-term immunity. like IgG. You have IgE, which is essentially for allergy or dealing with sort of parasite stuff in the gut. You have IgM, which is more of the acute infection. IgA, which lines the epithelial lining of your respiratory tract, your digestive tract, the kind of first line of defense. So there are all these different divisions of your immune system. Most doctors, when they think of a food sensitivity or allergy, talk about IgE, and they'll do skin testing. They can do blood testing, and you can measure that, and that's fine. That's really unusual and rare compared to food sensitivities, which are not true allergies, but they may be, we call them type 3 reaction or delayed hypersensitivity reaction. So it's a IgG usually, but it could also be IgA. And what happens essentially is that your gut and your immune system all are connected. 60 to 70% of your immune system is in your gut. And when that lining in your gut breaks down, we call it leaky gut, where the cells sort of come apart and the little tight junctions like Lego connections start to break down. Food and bacterial food particles or partially digested food and bacterial products tend to leak out and cause, you know, significant problems. And they leak into your bloodstream, which is right underneath your gut. And that's where your immune system is. So all the foreign particles are not supposed to be there. Your body goes, what is this? And it starts creating antibodies against them. This is called IgG. And that creates these low-grade sensitivity reactions. That can be, you know, fatigue, brain fog, headaches, digestive issues, congestion. I mean, I had a woman the other day, she said, every time I have dairy, I immediately start eating dairy and my nose runs. Well, that's an IgG reaction likely, but it's probably a chronic IgG. But most IgG reactions, you might not even know. You might eat something on Monday and on Tuesday you have a reaction, or your legs swell, or your joints hurt, or you feel a little tired, or you're headachy, or you're achy, or you get a rash or a pimple. Like, you just obviously can't tell. And so that's why an elimination diet is the most powerful test. If you look at what is the best allergy test or food sensitivity test, it's an elimination diet. Eliminating foods for a period of time and then reintroducing them one by one to see what happens. That is the best, and it's the cheapest, and it works. And the 10-day detox is a great model for that. I wrote that book a long time ago, about 8 years ago, and that has a lot of information about how to actually do an elimination diet, how to add things back in, how to watch for symptoms, how to track your symptoms. That's really the best because the tests are really unreliable. There are some that I do use, but I've used them in the context of understanding the overall picture. Because people sometimes will see a food sensitivity test. Well, I'm allergic to that food. I can never have that. No, that's not the case. Your body is telling you that you have a leaky gut. So the key is to fix your gut. And then you can start to tolerate more food. So I used to have a terrible leaky gut and I fixed it. And then, you know, before I could barely tolerate anything, and now I can eat pretty much anything. So when you fix your gut, you create resilience, and then you're not reactive to everything. Now, some things might be more permanent, like dairy or gluten or certain things people react to. You have to watch out for that. But the main thing is to do an elimination diet, reintroduction, and 10-day detox is really a very simple way to do that. As far as testing goes, I do use certain labs. I use Cyrex testing a fair bit, which is looking at IgG and IgA reactions to a whole bunch of wheat and gluten antigens. So we get antibodies to all of those antigens and we see what's going on. And then we also do cross-reactive foods like dairy and all their grains and soy and rice and eggs and so forth. So those can be pretty common. So I do like Cyrex. Immunolabs is pretty good. I've used that for years. But again, it's more of a sense of like when you see 30 reactions, it's not that they're really reactive to all those foods, it's that they essentially have a leaky gut. And so the key is to fix the gut. And that's really the take-home message here, is that food sensitivities are common. They cause delayed symptoms. They're real. And there's been some good clinical trials looking at this, for example, on ADD, removing those foods from tests and people get better. So I think there's a lot more to learn about it and there's a lot of controversy about it. But I think the main thing is that the tests are a guide, not like a gospel. But if you, for example, if you have a peanut allergy and it shows up in your blood, well, then you have a peanut allergy, like a true allergy. But this food sensitivity testing is a little bit different. And I think just people need to be a little bit more understanding of the context of it all, which is that, you know, they really mean to tell you about how your gut is and not so much that you're truly allergic or having a solid fixed reaction that can change over time. And I, for example, I had this one kid who was severe ADD, like 30 different food reactions, and we fixed his gut and we checked him again. He had like 6 mild reactions. So the body will heal and repair and those antibodies will come down over time.
Yeah. Wow. That's an incredible example. And thank you so much for all that information. I think that's super, super helpful. And over to you, Herschel, for the next question.
All right. So our next question comes from a practitioner. So obviously we have some members of the Dr. Hyman Plus community that are practitioners and some members that are not. And so this one is from a practitioner, and I'm going to have to read it off because it's kind of long. And obviously this is something you would understand. So she says, I recently ordered a neural Zoomer Plus lab from Vibrant Clinical Laboratories. It resulted in a positive HHV6 antibody and group A strep antibody. Has Hyman addressed treatment for either of these in the past?
Yeah, of course. So first of all, what the question is about a test that looks at antibodies or reactions to different viruses or bacteria. And a lot of people have latent infections and many viruses out there. HHV6 is one, CMV, EBV, there's a whole range of these viruses that tend to, be something we live with, but don't cause problems. For example, if you get a cold, it goes away. You don't carry the virus, but you'll carry antibodies to the virus. But for example, if you get chickenpox when you're younger, it doesn't really go away. It hides, and then you get shingles when you're older. Or let's say you get, a herpes simplex virus. Well, it stays in your body. And so maybe it doesn't ever show up as a cold sore, but when you're stressed or when you're tired or, something goes wrong, you get a cold sore. So that's where the virus sort of hides in the body. So we manage this very well most of the time, but sometimes it can cause chronic fatigue or other symptoms and it needs to be treated. Group B strep is a little bit different. That tends to be an infection that can cause various kinds of problems at time of birth, or they can cause other issues around strep like to pandas and other things, which is a pediatric neurologic condition that can be causing OCD that comes from chronic strep infections. So that's kind of, I'm very cautious about how I use it, and I really take it carefully with a clinical picture. But the real question is, how do you support someone's immune system? So it's the usual lifestyle stuff: diet, exercise, sleep, stress reduction, and then we kind of go deeper with immune support. There's various kinds of herbs. I like transfer factor multi-immune, which is essentially a colostrum-like product that really helps to boost immunity. I also like using antivirals sometimes that are herbal antivirals. I'll use Byramite formulas or olive leaf extract or other antivirals that are herbal. Rarely will use prescription antivirals, but sometimes they can be helpful depending on the case. What can really be helpful is ozone therapy. So intravenous ozone, rectal ozone can be done either directly at home easily by a machine you can buy for like under $1,000. And it's pretty inexpensive for, considering how long you can continue to use a treatment. Also there's 10-pass ozone, which is very effective. There's also peptides, which can be very effective in immunity, like thymosin alpha-1 and others, LL37, that can help with infections. Exosomes help, are another kind of more advanced therapy that have to do with providing stem cell-like products in the body that help immunity. So there's a lot of strategy we use. Sometimes hypothermia is being used in some countries to deal with chronic infections, where they heat your body up to 107 degrees, like in Mexico and Germany, they have a lot of this. And I've had patients who have chronic Lyme or tick infections that can be a last resort sometimes. So there's a lot of things we use to support the immunity, to be antimicrobial, and to help kind of sort through it all.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that teaser of exclusive content that you get every single month with Dr. Hyman Plus. If you want to listen to the full episode and get access to ad-free podcast episodes, plus Ask Mark Anything episodes, plus monthly functional deep dive episodes, I guess that's why we call it Dr. Hyman Plus, then head on over to the Doctor's Pharmacy on Apple Podcast and sign up for your 7-day free trial.
Hi, everyone. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.